Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
David, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm good, my friend. How about you?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Getting ready for a long weekend. And I don't know. Just going to try to take a little bit of R&R time. It's been crazy times.
Mm-hmm.
Went down to Miami this week for the IMN conference. That's always good. And, man, Miami's a crazy place. Just leave it at that. We had a hotel on South Beach.
It's a whole new world.
Life's different there. But we're going to talk, we're not going to talk about that, we're talking home improvement. We've got, always, we have lines open at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110, that's how to get in. We're happy to have your calls. We love talking about stuff that's important to you. And just in case we don't talk about stuff that's important to you, we'll just talk about stuff that we cook up. And so yours is usually better. But by way of our cooked up stuff, David, I did, I pulled some cool stuff, just, you know, cruising through our Journal of Light Construction. It is, there will be saws a-buzzing and, you know, hammers hammering, whatever, just that, those sounds you hear in the summertime. And, you know, decks are coming up again, right? People are out there building them, replacing them. And I took a minute to look at a couple places where we should pay a little bit of attention, I think, and share some good guidance. And that's how a deck is attached to the house. And I think there's kind of two aspects of that, David, I was thinking about. One is, okay, you're building a new deck. How do you do it? Because there have been some code changes over the years.
Yes.
And what was acceptable 30 years ago, even I think 20 years ago at this point, I can't remember, is not legit now for good reason. And then if you've got an existing deck, it's not uncommon to have issues and instability because how the deck was attached in the past has failed. And then the other place, it depends what folks have used. Believe it or not, there's still decks made out of just regular pine or spruce. There's decks made out of cedar. Then there's treated decks. And I want to talk about a little bit, David, about flashing those decks correctly when you're attaching them to the house, whether it's a brick veneer, which is a bit more challenging. I think we'll have a suggestion for what to do versus trying to, you know, penetrate and correctly fasten a deck with a brick veneer. But also like siding, fiber cement siding, you know, wooden siding, aluminum siding, those kinds of things. And so we'll take a minute to look at that. And then the other place that things can get dicey is attaching the stringers to the deck proper, ring joists, and making that stable and steady and up to code. It's not too bad, you know, when you're working at ground level and you can stand on the ground, but Charlotte isn't as hilly, I guess, as Atlanta is. We have a lot of walkout basements here, and then the decks, you know, that where you've got to build a landing that's basically still one story in the air and then come down off the landing. So attaching stringers, especially longer stringers properly, is something we'll take a minute to talk about. And then the famous, if you're laying out a deck for the first time, how do you get a right angle so that when you're done with your deck, it's not a rhombus? It's a pretty simple thing. It is a little bit of math. It's an isosceles triangle and a right triangle. Isosceles were the angles are. Isn't that where the angles are all the same?
Yes.
Okay. Whew. Sixth grade was five of the happiest years of my life. So that we have that, and then we'll do. I pulled up some old tips of the week. Some good stuff, I think. We'll look at those. And you said we might even have some. We have some emails.
We have a few. We do. We can look at those if need be.
If we have time, we'll do that. And then I got, you know, Father's Day is coming up, David. It's never too soon to plan on spending money on dad, in my opinion, speaking as a dad. Tools, we got a Ryobi One Plus Delight for you for the Home Depot product of the week this week. And let's see. That's it. That's everything. Oh, no. Lumber, right? Remember 2 years ago, lumber was like you could buy gold bullion or you could buy lumber and the, you know, price per ounce was close. Things have softened significantly, although there's, you know, still up over where they were. But the question keeps coming up. Well, now is it, you know, is a brick veneer cheaper than wooden siding? Is a composite deck less expensive than a wooden deck? And we'll take a second and just look at that. I think the answers are good. It's only a price point, right? It doesn't talk about any of the other aspects of choosing wood over stone over composite, but we'll at least take a look at that and do a little bit of a gut check on the price of lumber, because that is softening and it's getting realistic. Well, I don't know if it's realistic yet, but it's coming down. So that's good news. And I think that's, David, that's everything to kind of like, I don't know, we can fill 2 hours with that. Probably we could fill 2 days with that if you let us just ramble. So let's don't do that. We're to break. Oh my gosh, I did ramble. Apologies. We're going to take our break, folks. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Taking a quick break and be back after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dovall.
Got some lines open. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Let's talk home improvement. Let's see. David, attaching a deck to a house. Where do you want, like, what are some of the, well, first let's talk about a brand new deck. And let's talk about a brand new deck on a house that has a brick or stone veneer. How would you approach that?
Well, since it's a veneer, there's an airspace between the two, so there's special brackets, I believe, that you can purchase to hang them. And I think the code is changing. I'm not totally familiar with what they're asking now.
Yeah.
So it's different, but the reason is there's an airspace between the house and the back of the brick, 1 inch. Sometimes called finger room, but there has to be enough room to be able to hold the brick and put it in place.
Right.
And then those bricks, there's metal tabs that are nailed to the sheathing of the house. And when the brick mason gets there, every once in a while, they'll fold that tab up and they'll put it in the mortar joint. And that's what holds the brick to the house to keep it from tipping out and falling. A lot of people think the brick is holding the house up. The brick foundation may be, and it's really the piers, but if you were to attach the deck to that, you could actually collapse the brick. You could pull it in using the big 5/8 bolts. So that's part of the issue.
What about a scenario you're not like miles in the air? It's a deck, I don't know, less than 5 feet off the ground. You got a brick or stone veneer. Why wouldn't you just design it as a freestanding deck?
Well, you can, and I think that's what happens a lot of times. Is that it is treated that way. I think they still make you drill all the way through and put this anchor.
Really?
It has a cable, and right. what that's for is. I never really understood it because it didn't make sense to me, but I'm not really an engineer. But what it is to keep it attached to the house so that if a strong wind had to be really strong, or a tornado was to try to take the deck off of the house. I just, you know me, John, I'm thinking if a tornado's coming, it's probably, if it gets that close, it's probably going to take everything anyway. So we're pretty close.
Well, actually, okay. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I sure do.
That's actually the way to do it. Where you run into trouble with that is there's an existing footing for those posts to be that close to the house. The footing was going to be sticking out from the house a little bit because the footing's wider than the actual foundation of the house.
Right.
Anyway, if you do dig a footing there, then what has to happen is you dig beside that footing, then you have to drill into that footing and you have to put a couple of pins, rebar, and then you can pour that footing and then you can set your post on top of it and anchor the post to the top of the footing. And I had this conversation with someone the other day, John. I know you've seen this 100 times, but I looked at a deck that's settling, and what we think happened was that they dug a hole, they put the 6x6 in it, and they put the concrete around it. Yeah. Well, that keeps the deck from moving too much left or right, which it probably wasn't going to do much of that anyway. But it's not sitting on top of anything solid, so they're in a floodplain, and so the soil is soft or stays pretty soft, so I think the deck has settled. And so they're going to have to dig up the posts and put footings underneath them.
Yeah.
And it's been there a long time. I mean, it's been there for, I don't know, 30 years, 25 years, the house has been. So anyway, the proper way is you set a post, you dig a hole, you make sure the soil is tight and it's compactable, it's compacted, and then you pour your footing on top of that, and then you actually set the post on top of the footing once it hardens up, and they use some type of a bracket.
Right.
It can either be put in the concrete when it's wet, or you can bolt it to the concrete afterwards, and then you set the post in the bracket and bolt the bracket and the post together.
There's actually some codes about the size of that footing based on the height.
There is. It's usually three times, I think it's three times the diameter, I believe, of the post, something like that.
So here's a crazy question. I guess the footing for the house. Yeah, the difficult part there is the whole drilling into the existing footing for the house and pinning it.
Yeah. And you have to do that with anything. So if in the days when we were doing room additions, when you attach to an existing house, you have to dig the footing and then you would drill, and that's what you would do is you'd tie that footing to the other footing, and you would do that with rebar.
Got it. So it's a lot of work anyway to slice it. The shortcut of setting posts as an independent deck, is that actually easier with drilling the footing than tying into a brick veneer? I don't know.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, in your opinion, is it better where you have a brick veneer? Is it easier to just deal with the brick veneer or to set it up as a freestanding deck?
I would set it up as a freestanding deck. I was looking up now just to see what's available, what type of anchors or what they recommend. Now, they make some standoff brackets so that you can bolt to a house. And you basically you bolt that bracket to the house, but you have to open up that area, bolt the bracket and to the wood, to something solid, usually a ledger,
right?
And then you could attach your board to that, but they put the siding, or they put all of it back up before they actually put that ledger, so it's all closed in. So in other words, they open it up and put the bracket, and that's one way that they do it.
Okay, because I don't know. I think part of the reason that we have the some of the challenges that we have is I don't know, maybe it was just me, but it felt like that there was a whole period of time back in the 80s where a deck wasn't necessarily standard fare on a house, and so people just started slapping decks on. And I'll say professionals, people who were paid to do it for somebody else and do-it-yourselfers. And a lot of that just didn't get done right. especially as you listen to what we got to do now. I haven't checked in a while, but my favorite website, I think it was called the Best Deck Website Ever. That was literally the name of the website. And when I did all the stuff here, and even in Charlotte, Pineville there, I printed pages off of that to get my footer sizes to, I don't know. I found it very, very helpful. It's worth making the effort to get informed correctly.
Right.
And all that has to get inspected, right?
It does. And most counties offer, something like that, but you know, if you're in a county and they don't offer it, but you're in the same state, you can check another county near, usually a bigger city will have more information. Charlotte does have a good deck pamphlet out. I think Raleigh does too.
I would imagine Wake County is probably pretty good. I would imagine Guilford County is probably pretty good. Certainly, Mecklenburg. And York, I imagine, are all places where the resources are good. Again, not dissing anybody else, but there's probably a frequency factor there that, you know, has inspired folks to have some good resources. We're going to run a little, maybe we might run into a break time here, but another thing I'd like to talk about, David, is whether, no matter how you position a deck, attached to the house, freestanding, or whatever, you're going to be up against the house with deck boards and framing members, and there's potential for water to sit.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Either on the new deck or to sit against some portion of the existing structure. And that's an opportunity. If you've got treated decking, the decking may do well, but if you've through bolted and you haven't prevented water from getting back behind there, then you run the risk of creating rot in the structure of the house. I want to make sure that I'm not panic pedaling. So let's tackle that when we come back from our break. We're gonna have to sneak off to a break here.
Okay.
Folks, we're talking decks. We'll talk about anything that's important to you if you call us at 704-570-1110. That's 704-570-1110. Or you can go to askjohnanddave.com, click on the questions button, and send us a note that way, and we can chat that way as well. No matter what you do, get your cup of coffee. We're going to be on the air for a while, and we will return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show right after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And before we jump on the phone, we got Shannon's out there, but I want to pop our Home Depot product of the week in this week, and it's a good one. It is a good one. Father's Day is coming up, so that kind of bent my preferences, but I want to point you in the direction of the Ryobi One Plus Rotary Tool, and it's like it's the craft tool. David, you know, there were the Dremel tools and all those things, but this is 18-volt battery-powered, so no cords. Less than $100, and all of the tools and functionality of the cool rotary tool stuff, right? For crafts, for handyman repairs, fix, you know, getting at the strip screws and all those different things that it's handy for. You can step up your game though, if you'd like, and go to the brushless version. That's a little bit more expensive. It's $179, but it's the brushless power, right? So, and it's got a 2-amp-hour battery with it. But I just like the simple OnePlus. I love that whole OnePlus system because one battery drives, I don't know how many different tools. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week this week. It's the Ryobi OnePlus Rotary Tool, or if you want the brushless rotary tool because it's got more power. All right. Let's talk to Shannon, and then we'll come back to deck flashing. Shannon, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
I'm fine. I called in last Sunday. I was on my way home from work. I mean, last Saturday, I was on my way home from work and asked you about caulking around my sink because it had mold.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all told me the name of some products to get, and I thought, oh, I can remember those when I get home. So now I'm at home, and I've got a pen to write them down.
All right.
Again.
David, I think we said the PL I can't remember the numbers. PL polyurethane sealant is what we recommended, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just PL, as in Papa Lima.
Uh-huh.
And it's a polyurethane sealant.
Okay.
That's it. It's clear. We usually recommend the clear, just because it blends, it seals, it blends. If you get a little up one side or down the other, it doesn't create issues.
Okay, because I have a stainless steel sink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'll just get the clear.
Just get the clear.
Yeah. And y'all gave me the name of three things that but I don't remember.
Well, you can use a silicone, which is what was put on there, and it's probably fine, but you said it was
full of black mold.
Getting molding, yeah. Well, and that happened because it separated and the water got behind it.
And so y'all told me to clean all of that out.
Yeah, you'll cut that loose, but you're going to have to make sure the sink is supported underneath. If you get up underneath in the cabinet and take a flashlight and look on the sides and make sure that they put either some brackets or some type of wood, there's a rim around that sink. And a lot of times what they'll do is they'll add wood in there to hold that up while the caulk is curing. Because if not, then you're going to have to cut some boards and you're going to have to put it underneath the bowl of the sink. You're going to have to move the stuff out of the way and kind of jam those up underneath there and keep that sink tight, because you don't want that sink to fall down. It's got a garbage disposal hold on it, and it'll tend to pull away.
Okay.
It won't fall down completely, you know, but the pipes will hold it up, but you're liable to crack a pipe or have a leak or have a problem, so.
Okay. And you said something about denature of alcohol.
Yeah, we were just telling you how to make sure that, so when you scrape all that caulk out of there, a good practice is just to wipe it all down with denatured alcohol, because the alcohol bonds with any moisture and it evaporates. And so you know you've got a good dry surface to which you're applying the the PL sealant.
And it's easy to spray. It's easier to spray it in there to get in that crack, because you're going to have a hard time wiping anything in there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Just put it a little bit in a spray bottle and just spray it around. To have some ventilation. No open flames, obviously.
All right. No, I don't want any open flames.
Nope.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Shannon. Here comes James. Good morning, James. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Hello, fellas. look here, question. Me and my wife have decided we're thinking about moving. Well, first of all, my son's bought about, I think it's like almost 4,000 square foot house in Union County. It's on city water, but I'm surprised he even got that, because it's out in the rural area. But anyway, a septic tank. Here's my question. They got a pool, and we're thinking about putting like a 1,000-foot square foot pool house. Am I going to be able to tie into that septic tank?
Well,
is it going to be able to? My question is, will it handle it?
For a bathroom?
Inspector say it's okay. What? I'm sorry.
Is it just for a bathroom? You're not adding a bedroom, correct?
No, we're going to build a pool house.
Understand, but it's not a bedroom in the pool house, is there? There's not going to be a bedroom in the pool house.
Maybe not, because what we've seen is just one big room.
Okay, so it's just going to be an open shelter with a bathroom. So yes, you can tie into the septic system. It's based off of, septic systems are based off the number of bedrooms in the house, not the number of bathrooms.
Oh, really? So, but if I build a bedroom, then I might have a problem.
Then you would have a problem. Yep.
Oh, but if I don't build a bedroom,
it's just another bathroom. It's the same amount of people in the house, essentially.
You can have a big time, sleep in the pool house. You just can't have a bedroom in there.
Right.
Excuse me? I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. You can do whatever you want in the pool house. You just can't have a bedroom there.
Oh, I got you. So they see it as not like I said, another
occupants.
They're
thinking about occupants, right?
What we've seen is none of them have bathrooms. Bedrooms. So I guess that's why they do that, so they don't have to worry.
Actually,
about
they're all they're thinking of, James, is they're saying how many bedrooms in the house, because that will be a better indicator of how many people will live in the house, and the more people in the house, the more septic capacity you need, right? So you could have one bedroom and 50 baths, and they would be fine with that because you're not going to have 50 people in one bedroom.
Got you. Well, I knew you guys could tell me. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, James. Thank you for your call. Have a good one. That sounds like a fun place to be. We should follow up with James.
Yes. Going to do an inspection.
Speaking of fun places to be, let's pay some bills. We're going to take a little break. 704-570-1110. We'll chat when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're got lines open at 704-570-1110. Give us a call, 704-570-1110. Right now we're going to talk to Greer. Good morning, Greer. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning. I have a house that was built in 1978 and is now undergoing some foundational structural repairs. Mm-hmm. They recommended that I encapsulate the crawl space because there is mold growing there. My question now is between the termite people and the foundation repair people. If I have it encapsulated, the termite company said that it'll be difficult for them to inspect. And I asked about having the termite traps put in instead of continuing to treat the soil that they're going to be digging up. So my question is, what direction should I go in? Should I have the foundation or the crawl space encapsulated after all the structural repairs are done, and maybe risk not having a full termite inspection? Or should I go with the new termite company that puts in those traps all the way around the house?
Well, I think, first of all, when they encapsulate, they leave an inspection band around, so they don't take the liner that they install all the way from up the masonry to the wood. They leave a 2 or 3 inch space around it, and it could be more than that. It's some number, but it's a place for the inspector, the pest control company to inspect and see that line. Now, you know, termites build a tunnel of dirt, and they crawl through it. They can't get dried out. So that's what they're looking for, are those tubes. That's the way that they see them. That's the way they find them, I think, 99% of the time, John.
I think you're right.
So as far as covering it up, now, can they treat it afterwards? That's the big question is how are they treating it? And
we had the treatment done in the early 90s by the same company, and I've been with them ever since. They treated the foundation inside and out. Everything has been fine. I've had an annual inspection. I have quarterly treatment for other pests, and everything has been fine. Now, the foundation company said that when they're done with the structural repairs, that they will tell me so that they can coordinate with the pest control company, and they can come in and treat around the piers and around wherever they have disturbed the dirt. But again, I spoke to the pest control company, and because of the times that we're living in, they said, you know, you realize that we can't schedule right away.
Yeah, you'll be fine. No, if it's a couple of months out, you know, I just paid for mine. I paid for mine in April for a May inspection, and last year they didn't come until July. So that's kind of the way it is. And it's because they're short staffed.
But the pest control representative that I spoke to said, even if they put in that liner, and the foundation company said that they were going to put it, they always put it within 3 inches of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, they may not be able to see everything once that liner's in, and if they don't see the tubes coming up, that they they might miss it. She says it might be a bit of a risk. So I don't intend to be in this house that much longer. My husband passed away, and I'm trying to get everything ready so that I can live more comfortably and maybe sell it in a few years. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking if I encapsulate it, it doesn't sound like it'll be a big risk to me and might be a selling point.
Well, I think it will be, John. I mean,
I agree. I think what you're doing by encapsulation is wise, prudent, and actually, I can't say it reduces the risk of termites, but when you dry that out, you make it less likely that they'll be, to David's point, tunneling up. And if they do, you'll see that. I mean,
it's breaking up a little bit.
It's hard for them to get through that liner around it. It's sealed all the way around the perimeter. So I think your chances are better. And then if, you know, if someone's interested in going to the bait stations, you can keep your regular bond with them and they'll still do the inspections, but that's most important is having the inspections done. If you find termites, if you have inspections done every year and then they find termites, there's probably a pretty good chance there's not going to be a lot of damage anyway, because you've been staying on top of it. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, and I don't think I would switch to the bait stations at this point. It's been treated. You may want to just have them retreat the entire crawl space rather than just spot treat it before they put the liner in, and then
That's a good idea.
And then you'll be good. Then it'll be done.
I'm surprised they didn't recommend that.
Yeah, I am too.
That since it's been the 90s and there has been a disturbance in the soil, I would suspect that they would want to retreat the entire thing. And if they don't, I would get a price for them to do that. And then you're really in a good spot.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, can I ask you one more question before I go?
Sure.
If you go quickly.
If encapsulation is, I don't know if it's the way to go now, and so many people are doing it. Why do I see around me houses that are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and they're still putting in vents in the foundation?
Because it's just the way people have built for so long. If you have to have a plan if you don't put foundation vents, and there has to be an extra drawing, and there has to be a stamped engineering drawn when the house is built. And so I think they just leave that up to people to do it afterwards. But John and I are with you. We kind of think that really what should happen is they should just pour the entire foundation with concrete, put a vapor barrier down, pour concrete, and then that way the house is more serviceable from the top. But people have to pay for that. So, you know, the builder's not going to eat that. So, to me, it's a great idea. I didn't do my house just for that reason. We didn't have it in the budget. You know, that's almost 3,000 square feet of concrete to pour that you're hardly ever going to use. So we had other things we needed to spend that money on.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate your help.
You're welcome.
And I hope you all have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
You do the same.
Thank you, Greer. You too. Appreciate your call.
Bye.
Let's see if we can get Mike and just set the topic if we have to hold him to the break. Mike, you're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
I got a question. Did a show on sealing driveways.
Yes.
Which one did y'all come out with the best for the long term? This is an old driveway.
John, I think you like the Bear.
I use the Bear. Very easy to use. It's a water base. It's not super expensive, and it performs exceptionally well.
And that's available at Home Depot, and it's a Bear concrete sealer, BEHR.
All right, I'm familiar with the paint.
Okay. Well, they have a concrete sealer, and it's a water base, so it doesn't smell as bad. It's easy to use. It's easy to apply.
Easy cleanup. It works well.
So wash the driveway, let it dry, and then apply a coat or two of that, whatever it needs.
Soak it up.
All right.
That's what I needed.
Well, have some fun, Mike.
No, have a good holiday. Thank you.
You too. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Yeah, good for Mike. Planning. See, he can be very happy. Much easier to clean. Much easier to maintain.
Yeah, I love mine, and it's even though I didn't use the water base, I used a solvent base, but mine was for curing purposes. So.
Right. All right, we have got to sneak away for another break. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. You can call us at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're going to take a break, but we'll have some lines open. Or you can go to AskJohnAndDave.com, click on the questions button, and send us a question that way. No matter what you do, get a little cup of coffee, get some energy, get ready for a great weekend, and call us when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back, everybody. This is hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Lines are open, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Great calls, great questions. Thanks to everybody who joined us last hour. David, I would like to go back to the conversation that we were having with respect to decks. Talked about tying them, you know, how you fasten them to the existing home correctly. One of the places, though, that there is a lot of where there's failure or potential issues is how water gets back behind, rests on either deck components or framing components of your home that have been used to fasten the new deck to the house. And it's, I'll say it's not important. It's a little less important when you're talking treated wood on the outside, which tends to hold up to water. Fine. It's when water sits on the treated components and can seep back behind siding or back into the framing members of the house to which it's fastened, and that wood, save the mud sill, is not treated. And so we run the chance of allowing some serious damage to happen over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the solution? Flashing, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, flashing. So if you have we talked a little bit about brick houses, and you'll want to make sure that you check with your local codes. And we have so many people listening in so many different places. There's a little bit of different take on some of this. Eventually, it's all kind of comes down to the same thing, but there's accepted practices in different areas. So make sure you check with your building standards department when you get your permit. Those guys are glad to help you and talk to you about it and tell you. But if you don't really have an understanding of it, you're probably not going to understand what they tell you either. So at that point, you may want to hire someone just to come and help you get started. That's a pretty critical point right there, John. So it can cost you a fortune. I looked at a house this week that has just those problems. There's water getting behind the ledger board fastened to the house, and they've got band sill problems, and it's going to be expensive, you know. And I told the guy that they're going to have to take the deck completely loose from the house and support it temporarily. He looked at me like I had two heads. So,
because it sounds like monstrous.
It's just extra work that has to be done, and of course the deck has to be moved away enough for them to be able to properly flash it when it's all finished as well. So. First of all, there's some great videos out there on deck flashing. So if you'll look that up, you could just do in your search deck ledger board flashing. One of the best ones is the International School out in Colorado. He has a really simple flashing technique, and they're using the flashing tapes, John, that are wider. And they're self-healing. So what that means is when you put a fastener through it, the flashing or the tape actually goes back around the fastener and seals off so that you don't get a potential leak there. And it's hard to explain, but essentially what you're trying to do is you want to get the ledger board bolted to the house, but you need to have something behind that. So if moisture gets behind it and a drip cap on the bottom of the ledger, and then you need a flashing on top of it, and then you need another flashing over top of that. So it's really, it sounds complicated. It's really not. That's why I say it's much easier to see the pictures.
See the videos.
Yeah,
there
if you watch that or if you look at that, you'll have a better understanding. And it seems like a lot of overkill, but it's not. And then, John, I wanted to go back to something you talked about. Treated lumber fares better when it's with water, and it truly does do better with water, but it does better when it can, if it gets wet and it can dry back out.
Right.
You don't want to keep it constantly wet. And what one of the things we're seeing now is they're taking the same type of flashing tape, that's the self-healing type of tape, and they're actually putting this and peeling the backing off and sticking it to the top of the joist.
Yes, there's a whole series. There's another great video out there. There's Trex makes a product. I think it's called Trex Seal, and they've got it in different widths, and it does. It sits on top of the joist. There's another one where they're wrapping butyl tape, putting it behind, like a fascia board that used to finish off,
right,
where you're doing the composite decking, right? So they're actually putting a butyl tape along the framing member there. It just makes good sense because that's where moisture is going to get trapped.
Well, it gets trapped, and then if your deck boards are spaced properly, especially if you're using a composite and they're spaced properly, there's a pretty good sized gap between those boards. So debris falls down in there, and then that debris can stay wet or damp, and it eventually rots away at the top of the board. Now, it's not going to cause the deck to collapse, but it does weaken it over time. And then if you ever did want to change your decking out, it's nice to be able to just leave the frame and reuse it. And if this tape's not put on top of it, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be replacing several of the joists. So, it seems overkill, but it's what you're doing is like what we're always talking about is you're looking out for the future. You're trying to make it as low maintenance as possible, and you want to make it last as long as it possibly can. And if you want it to last longer, that's a way to do it. Now, that's not a code yet, as far as I know, but it sure is a good idea.
If you just look it up, you'll find article after article dealing with it, so you know it's an issue.
Well, it's gotten to the point now that there's actually steel joists are becoming fairly popular.
Yeah. There's a whole piece of building a deck on a welded steel frame.
Yes. Pretty
cool.
Pretty cool stuff.
I'm sorry. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back to answer your questions. 704-570-1110. The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We'll come right back. The Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We have some lines open. We're taking calls at 704-570-1110. Happy to talk about what's important to you. David, while we're on the topic of decks, laying out a brand new deck, no matter what the distance in the air or on the ground, requires 4 90-degree angles as a general rule. Now, if you're doing a freeform deck, all bets are off, and we actually have a tip of the week coming up here that we can take a look at that talks about dealing with freeform designs. But when you're going to do 4 90-degree angles, like, you can't just take your square out there, speed square, rafter square, and get it right. There's a little geometry involved, correct?
Correct.
And I think there's two ways to do it. One of them, I think, is the most common, is the 3-4-5, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say you make it a triangle where one leg is 3 foot, the other leg is 4 foot, and the hypotenuse is 5 foot. So you lay out your lines so that when you have them at 90 degrees and you pull a line or take a measure from the tip of the top of one leg to the from the end of one leg to the end of the other, it's 5 foot. When those dimensions are achieved, then you've got a 90-degree angle. The question then becomes, well, jeepers, my deck might be more than 3 feet by 4 feet. What do I do next? And this is really, really mind-boggling, but you just multiply it. So if you need it to be 18 feet, well, that's 6 times 3. So you just make the same adjustment to the other dimensions. And as they say in math class, voila, you're there. look it up online. Great, great resources, little videos, how to. If you're dealing, I don't know why you would do this. I guess it's possible. I think we confirmed, or you confirmed for me, that an isosceles triangle is one where all the angles are the same, or is that equilateral?
Well, it's two legs.
Two legs are the same. Correct. Thank you. Which means opposing angles would be the same.
Correct.
Anyway, who cares? That was a long time ago. But if you're doing two legs the same, say 2 foot by 2 foot, the ratios are simple. Leg one and leg two are the same. The longer leg will be 1.414, like times that, right? So I think it's just easier to do the 3, 4, 5. I guess that's why everybody talks about that one.
Right.
It's just much easier. But it's not brutal to get that figured out, and it's it makes it easy. Or it ensures that you end up with a 90-degree angle at each of your corners. Unless you're going for the free form. In which case, David,
sometimes they start out with a rectangle and end up with a free form.
Yeah, yeah. there's lots of great stories out there if you want to check that out, too. I used to subscribe to the Reader's Digest magazine, Home Fix, and I can't remember the name of it. And every issue, they would at the very back have, bungles, things that people kind of messed up. It was funny. Some of them were downright dangerous. So a tip of the week while we're talking about free form. This goes all the way back to like 2007. In fact, May 26th of 2007. This week's tip comes from the Hose Shows. File, the Hose Shows. That was a stretch. Designing a natural area or landscaping on a piece of paper is easy. You can give a natural area or garden curves and free forms and shapes that are very attractive. The problem comes when you go to lay out the design on the ground. A little trick will help with the design, and it will allow you some flexibility. Get your garden hose out. Shut the nozzle off and turn the water on so the hose fills up with water. Once the hose is full, you can turn off the water so the pressure doesn't build. Now that the hose is full of water, you can lay it out on the ground to create the shapes you want. The beauty of the hose is that if you don't like the shape, you just move it versus respray painting your grass. Naturally, this is much better than digging out the design only to discover you don't like it. Once you have the hose in the shape you like, get a can of upside down spray paint, spray the design on the ground. You can move the hose and get to work. What do you say?
Still works. It's a simple way to do it. And usually you have all those things. You have a hose and all of that. So Works out pretty well. I did something this year. I don't know if this is ingenuity or just a necessity because my back hurts. It's bending over is the less I bend over, the better off I am, it seems like. But when I laid my landscaping fabric out for different things, so like we put our beds in front of the house and to shape them, so we bought the wider material, laid it out, and stapled it in most places. And then I just took my paint and freehanded around the edging and made my curves and the angles, whatever I wanted. So then I took my torch on a hose, a propane torch, and clamped it to a piece of PEX. And then I just lit it, and I went along and followed that line and burned the fabric off. And it's perfect because it does two things. I didn't have to bend over for one, but two, the fabric didn't fray because, you know, when you cut it a lot of times, it'll depending on what you're using, it frays out.
It's annoying. Yeah, it's very annoying.
So anyway, it worked out pretty well in my buddy happened to come by when I was doing it, and that's what he said. He said, that's the epitome of laziness right there, my friend.
You know, there's a fine line between laziness and genius. And I would argue perhaps the former can inspire the latter.
Yeah. You'll adapt, right?
Lazy people didn't want to walk from Charlotte to Los Angeles.
Or ride a horse.
All right. They weren't lazy. That's a terrible thing to say, but so that's a cool little way to do it. I think you did you put I can't remember if you said you put like edging around after you cut all that out.
I didn't. I normally will use some type of a weed killer and the weed eater and keep that. I'll keep a 6-inch path. Yeah. Around that. And then that's a place for your mulch, whatever you're using, whether it's pine straw or pine bark, it can kind of bleed into that area a little bit. And then when you're using the lawnmower, it gives you a little area to for the wheels to roll into or for the lawnmower deck. And then, you know, once I get that done, it just makes it easier for me, and I don't have to spray Roundup very often, and I don't have to weed eat very often. But, you know, you don't have to do it every time. Right. It just makes it a little bit easier. But I planted Bermuda grass, so, you know, you have to stay after that stuff because it'll be in your beds pretty quick. So,
like he's in the master bedroom?
Uh-huh. Could be in there if you let it. It could be if you let it go.
It's the kudzu of grass. Hey, here's one before we go to our break. A tip of the week. This week's tip comes from our half-lit file. Half-lit. I like that. When planning light fixtures for your home, new or replacement, it's a good idea to select a fixture that requires two bulbs. This is especially true for a hallway or the home of an elderly individual or couple. The reasoning is simple. If one bulb burns out, the second will remain lit, so the area will be illuminated until the bad bulb can be replaced. You can understand why if you think this is an important feature for elderly parents or friends. It's really a safety issue. Think about it before you place lighting fixtures.
I like that.
I like it too. The good news is now,
right?
If you've switched to LED bulbs, odds are you'll be elderly before they ever burn out.
Right.
Like you can will them to your kids.
Yeah, and a lot of those fixtures come with the bulbs in them now.
So yeah, they do.
You have to throw the fixture away. I bought some lights for the outside of the house, and they were fairly expensive, so I wasn't real thrilled about that because I really like the lights, and they probably won't be around. Well, I won't probably have to worry about it either.
Integral. All right, we got to take a break. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We've got more tips. We got more stuff, but we really want to talk about your stuff. Give us a call, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110, lines open. And you can send us a note at AskJohnAndDave.com. Just click on the questions button, type it in, tell us what's going on, and we can answer your question that way too. We may even get to some of those emails a little bit later in the show. So grab a cup of coffee, get ready. The Home Depot Home Improvement Show is coming right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we are taking your calls. We've got some lines available. They're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Before we dig deeper into any of our topics, we want to do our Home Depot product of the week. And this week, it's a really good one. Father's Day is coming up. Think about this. The Ryobi One Plus. And so that means the cools, you know, the One Plus battery that fits all those different devices. The One Plus rotary tool. Rotary tool station is probably its right terminology because it's actually got a dial for variable speed and stuff like that. But it's a rotary tool. It can be everything from hobbies to home improvement to fix it to the dealing with the, you know, cutting the head on a strip to screw, all those different things. And it's not going to break the bank. It's like $99 now because sometimes more is better. There's a Ryobi One Plus HP, which is the brushless technology. It's a little more expensive. It's like $235. It's got the brushless technology. I think that one actually comes with a battery, a 2-amp-hour battery. The first one is just a tool only. But check it out. It's the Ryobi One Plus 18 volts cordless rotary tool station. That's our Home Depot product of the week for this week.
I have one of those.
Do you?
I have the older version, but it's still the same tool. It works.
My son Chris had a different one, and it didn't hold up. Wasn't happy. It was a popular one, but I was not happy with it.
Right.
Much better. All right, good deal. Folks, we got lines open. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Wow, David, I don't know if you want to, I'm looking on my, yeah, I don't know if you want to look up some emails. I want to pop a couple. And you may say, John, that was just crazy to do on the air, but I think we should give it a try because I think it's really good information. Because one of the reasons I just sat with a gentleman yesterday, he goes, John, I thought of you yesterday. I'm like, oh, why is that, Brian? And he said, well, because when I opened my screen door, my storm door on the front of the house, it just came off in my hand. And I'm like, and that made you think of me? Just home improvement stuff, right? But you got to replace it. But here's the tip. I want to read it. This week's tip comes from, it don't mean a thing if you don't get the swing. Where's that going? Here's an easy way to remember something that confuses a lot of people. In remodeling projects, it's not uncommon to remove and replace a door. When you go to the home improvement store and select the style you like, you will be asked, what swing do you need? If you're like many folks, you'll look at the salesperson and say, I'm not sure. Well, here's how to be sure. Doors are referred to as left hand or right hand. Imagine yourself in front of the door and imagine that you're going to pull the door toward you. If when the door swings toward you, the knob is on the right, it's a right hand door. And yep, you guessed, if the knob is on the left, it's a left hand door. The knob is in the middle, it's a bifold door. That's not in here. This works for both interior and exterior doors. Now, because that was so simple, we need to throw a curveball. The rules change when you're talking about a storm door. Storm doors are referred to as hinged left or hinged right. Take the same approach to solving the problem. Imagine that you're pulling the door toward you. If the hinge, not the knob, is on the left, it's left hinge door. And if it's on the right, it's a right hinge door. This makes sense if you think about it, because if you open a storm door, you want the knob for the entrance to the door to be immediately in front of you so that you don't have to reach far into the corner to open the storm door to unlock your entrance door. Swing on into your supplier with this new knowledge and you'll get it right every time. They should fire the guy who wrote these.
It sounds like you wrote that. It's all those play on words.
Sick mind. All right, let's talk to Jim. Good morning, Jim. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Jim, you there? I have a question about low voltage lighting. I installed a low voltage lighting around my house a couple years ago. And I have one transformer that it's one of the higher end transformers as far as what it can handle. Mm-hmm. And I have two sets of lights on it, one in the front of my house, and it's continually working on mode. And then I have a string of retaining in the house, also on the same transformer. Mm-hmm. And it worked fine for 2 years. Somebody was at a family event, sat on the wall, and caused a break in the line underneath the cap on the wall cap. Mm-hmm. The top, you know, the cap on the retaining wall. Mm-hmm. And I'm struggling ever since to get the string of lights in the back to work. The ones in the front still work, so I know the transformer's good. I'm just wondering, is there a couple of steps to follow? I know it might involve a voltmeter to see how I can get the backlights to work, because they're still connected at the same spot at the transformer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use an ohm meter. You have to disconnect the power, disconnect the wire from the transformer, and you're going to twist those two wires together right there, and then you'll go to the other end, to the very end of that wire on the back, and you'll touch your ohm meter right and left to the probes, and if you should have zero resistance.
Okay.
And if you have resistance, if it reads any numbers on there, then you've got a break in that line somewhere. And it could
fixture by fixture.
Right? Well, yeah, and you could go fixture by fixture. But did you have string lights? Is that what you had?
No, I cut a V groove in the top of the retaining wall.
Okay.
And ran the wire all the way 120 feet. So no, they're in sequence.
Okay. Did you fill it?
I do have a break in the line that I'm fixing.
Okay.
But when I put a voltmeter on that line with the power off, with the power on, I didn't get any reading.
Okay. Yeah. So you've got a break somewhere in there. So as John said, it'll be at each individual light, and then until you get to the end. But I mean, you should find the problem in between. Did you fill that? Did you fill that wire back in, or will you cut the groove? You laid the wire in.
I cut the groove and laid the wires in the channel, and then I had to attach each individual light every 9 feet, and I used the connectors that had, that you melt down to prevent moisture, and then I also put electrical tape around them.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where you're gonna have to start from the front to the back, and twist those two wires, but take them loose off the transformer, tie those together, and then you'll need your ohm meter, and then you'll check it at each fixture. You're gonna have to open each one up, and
Okay, so you're going to tie the positive and negative together nowhere near the transformer, and then put the ohm meter at the other end.
Yeah, well, just detached from the transformer, because you don't want to try to ohm, because you'll get false readings.
Okay.
So take it completely off of the terminals, and then twist those two together. So you're completing the circuit, essentially, is what you're doing, and then you're going to go to each light, and you should have no resistance at each light.
I really appreciate it. Thanks. I love listening to your show.
All right, man.
Calms me down for the weekend.
All right. Thank you for your call. Clyde, we see you out there, but we got to take a break. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. We'll be right back after these important messages.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're going to talk to Paul. I'm sorry, to Clyde. Clyde, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Great. How can we help?
I appreciate the article on the deck, talking about the decks. I'm getting ready to do mine. I just did a cedar fence that had about 300 planks in it that I completely, it was 30 years old, and I completely redid all of it.
Wow.
I used the bare, clear, transparent material on there, and it just did a superb job. I think it looks great.
Nice.
Now I'm going to do my deck, and my deck was stained about 6 years ago. It's got screws in it so all the boards can come out, and it's not a very big deck. It's probably got 40 boards in it. But am I going to have to just, I'm going to try to save about half of them the way it looks, and do I need to just sand that stuff off of there and use the bare solid material? Would that work real good on that?
It will, but I think rather than sand it, now you can sand it, but they make a deck cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
But if it needs to be sanded and you're trying to get it cleaned up to match other boards or get closer to it, then sanding is the answer. Just obviously wear a dust mask or hook a vacuum to your sander. So that you're not breathing all that dust in.
Yeah, I was thinking about maybe renting one of those bigger ones, you know, where I can take the boards off and just go over it pretty easily.
Yeah. And good luck with that, because you're even if it was put with ceramic screws, you're probably gonna probably have trouble getting them off. So what you should probably anticipate is trying to get a couple of boards off, and then you may end up using a reciprocating saw from the side to bust those, to cut those screws off, and then anything that's left sticking up, you can grind them off. I don't know if you heard us talking earlier about maybe putting some tape down on top of those joists since you're removing the deck boards, but it's not a bad idea. And then I don't know if you have any cedar shield at home, but you might want to order some, so when you take that off, if there is any rot in the top of those joists, you can apply it to the top of the joist, and it'll make that solid again and stop that rot. And then you can, after 72 hours, you can put that tape over top of it, and you won't have to replace those boards.
That's a great idea. I used that cedar seal on the fence I did, and I got 3 gallons of it and just slapped it on there, and man, it did a great job.
Right, and quick for you and everybody listening, this week it's 20% off and free shipping for over $169 order. I think I always order it by 5 gallon pails.
Yeah.
So I'm ordering it this week, but it's 20% off. Honor 20, I think, is the code.
Yeah, those guys are great to work with out there in Texas, and they were as nice as they could be. And,
mm-hmm.
Okay, well, great. I appreciate it. I'll get some tape, and I'll do that, and get some more cedar shield and put on there, and then go from there then.
Good luck.
Awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Clyde, thank you for the call. Clyde goes off to work on the deck, and here comes Paul.
Hey, I'm having trouble. Oh, there we go. Thanks, Chris.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, guys. How are you? Happy Saturday.
And to you. How can we help?
Hey, guys. I don't see as well as I used to, so I'm looking for some solar lights. So would love to get your all's recommendation. There's a lot of different brands out there, lot of controversy. They're great. They're not great. They're good. They're not good. What are your thoughts?
I mean, some of the inexpensive ones that you can buy. The problem is they don't. I don't know. I've had a couple out there at some trees that are on a berm. It's too far to get a wire out there. It's not worth it. So I just buy those inexpensive solars. And if you put a couple, two or three of those, they make pretty good light. I was pretty impressed, and they're still lasting. I mean, they're a couple, two, 3 years old. They've been in the elements.
You don't have to, Paul. One tip that I've heard though, and I haven't seen this written or included in instructions anywhere. A tip that I heard is to take a polyurethane sealant, just a thin bead, and seal around the corners of the solar panel.
I like that.
And The alleged result is
it sheds the water.
Exactly, and the battery actually lasts longer, and it burns longer between charges, like before it has to get charged again by the sun, and the unit itself lasts longer. That's the only thing that I've heard, like, kind of weird or unique. Other than that, it's kind of pick one that you like.
But so to back to your question, to get, it sounds like you're looking for the brightest light for the smallest package. That tends to be the problem, is that those units are so small and the solar collector on them are so small that it can only give you so much light.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It'd have to be much larger in order for it to have a higher wattage light. So at that point, you know, if you really need brighter light, then you're kind of back to wiring them. You know, hardwiring and putting a set in a transformer. And we just had that call from Jim, and he was pretty creative with what he did. You know, so he cut into a retaining wall, hid the wire. You know, I like that. He's got his thinking cap on, but it can be done. Most of the time, you can hide it. It's not always, but most of the time.
Well, I would assume that Home Depot has someone, if I decide to go that way, to give me a helping hand in regards to that.
Yeah, I would think so. I know Darlene works that area in Pineville, and she's pretty up on all the lighting and what's going on with it. So good stuff. But yeah, unfortunately, there are some lights out there. We bought some years ago for the homeowners association to light up the entrance, and they bought them, and they spent a lot of money on them because they were supposed to last, but the light just was not that bright, and it had a pretty good sized little collector on it, and it still didn't do what it needed to do.
Yeah, well, I love the tip about the polyurethane. That makes a whole lot of sense, because that seems to be where they die the fastest.
Yeah. Sure, getting water into the fixture. I didn't even think about that, and you can do that with the clear. OSI clear, it's a translucent color, so you probably don't even know it's on there. And really, does it really even matter? Right?
No.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great Saturday. As you always know, love listening to you and appreciate you.
All right. We'll look forward
to hearing the voice of Paul Jameson.
Yep. And
WBT.
We'll listen for you this afternoon.
All right, friend. Be well.
Thanks, Paul. All right, Paul's off to work on lighting things up. You know, you can cheat a little bit for the brightness piece, David, just by choosing, I'd have to go look, but choosing the cooler temperatures of lights.
Well, yes. So some more of your daylight and the bright. But and then the other thing is, too, that happens to those fixtures is the lens starts to yellow. From being out in the sun.
Right.
So the lens that the light's actually shining through, because they have a lens over it, obviously, to keep the water out. And I noticed, that's what I noticed with those. But for $788, a piece.
You could buy a couple and just replace
you could buy them, and you can replace them every couple of years. It's not too bad. But if you need brighter light, you have to buy more than you think you need. But if you're just looking for some soft light, just to light up some trees or some shrubs or something like that, or just to wash the house, you know, it's not a bad way to go. But boy, if you can get a transformer and get the wire run, you can. It's unlimited what you can do.
Yeah, and you can be pretty. You don't have to be super precise with that wire, right?
No. And it's pretty easy to do. Just read the directions, and especially the LED tells you to start in the middle. Try to get the transformer in the middle, and take the wires in both directions instead of putting it all the way at one end and starting the other. Because that's what happens a lot of times, because that's the only outlet you have. So.
All right. We got to scramble, folks. Please, as we celebrate this weekend, please remember the purpose of the weekend, our fallen heroes and the heroes who served us to protect the liberties that we have and take for granted many, many times every single day. Keep that in mind, please. And then we love to remind you that we think that the most important kind of home improvement you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. As you celebrate, as you get on with next week, don't forget to work on that project. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.